You want to grow personally and professionally, but you want it to be growth that's done in a playful and fun way. You definitely want to become the next level version of yourself, but also your life is busy and you're not really sure how you're going to fit it all in. If you can relate, this is the podcast episode for you. Welcome to the Grow With Intention podcast, a podcast for people that want to create a life that feels really bloody good. In this episode, I'm interviewing Susan J. Ashford, the author of the book, The Power of Flexing. The fun story behind this podcast episode is that I originally heard about Susan's book through her daughter, Hannah, who emailed me and was like, hey, like my mom released this book that I reckon you're really going to love. Hannah was not wrong. Her mom released an excellent book, so good that it now has what, over 30 Kindle highlights in my Kindle. It induced many aha moment for me. I still refer back to that book and some of the lessons in it pretty often. If you enjoy this episode and you want to get your hands on the book, I really recommend that you do. It's going to be linked in the podcast show notes so that you can grab your copy. Now, let's get into the episode. Your book is all about the power of flexing. I would love for you to tell me a bit of an overview of what flexing actually is.
It's the most frequently asked question about my book. In America, there's kind of a street meaning for flexing, which means bragging about yourself. That's not what I mean. Okay. I only found out about that with like 2 months to go before the book was going to be published. I'm like, no, that's not it. Flexing is really meant to convey that our growth doesn't need to be monolithic and some big onerous thing that we take on, but by adopting a few practices that you use somewhat regularly, we can grow incrementally over time to become really the best version of ourselves, the version we most want to be in the world. So it's flexible in that you can pick it up and decide you're going to work on growing some element of yourself, then you can put it down. The story I tell is that last Christmas holidays, I have 3 daughters, and 2 of them now are married. They're 2 son-in-laws as well, and they're all coming home for the holiday. And, you know, they're excited, so they're coming home for a long time, 15 days. And I'm like, oi, 15 dinners, 15 lunches, 15, you know, changing the sheets, making the towels fresh. And so I really decided I wanted to work on being more patient during the holiday. I don't have trouble with patience normally, but that was a different time. I picked it up. I used the ideas in the book. It was super helpful to me. Then I kind of put it back down. So it's flexible in that way. And then the idea of trying small things, the idea is that you'll try them. If they don't work, you'll discard them and try something else so that you can be flexible in your approach to your growth.
And it's such a natural way to integrate goals into your life, isn't it? It's almost like you look at the experiences that are ahead of you and you shape your goals around those experiences. Is that right?
Well, that would be one way. That's what I did in my holiday example. Another way is you come to know you need to grow in some way. You've gotten feedback or, you know, this book is very popular with 20-somethings transitioning from school where they understood the rules really well by the time they graduated from college to the work world where they don't understand the rules super well and they need to learn them and they know they need to change some elements of themselves. One guy got feedback. His boss said, you know, you are a 99%er. And he told me that he recalled thinking, well, that's really good. 99%, that's almost there. And then it occurred to him that his boss wasn't saying that in a positive way. His boss was saying, you don't take things across the finish line. And so that put that issue on his agenda. And then he looked for experiences to practice getting better at it. So you can either have the experience first or have the goal first. But the idea is you grow by going at your experiences differently with a mindset of your own personal growth.
So could you just explain to me the difference between, you know, the regular average goal setting process versus the flex goal process?
Yeah. So most of the goals we have in life are what I would call content goals. There are goals about tasks. We want to get this much done in a day, or your boss tells you you need to get that much done in a week. And those are super important. The flexing framework is all about how do you grow yourself? How do you grow to be more personally effective, more interpersonally effective? And so the goals you take on really have to be ones you choose. The other people can give you feedback that makes that goal important, but you have to make the choice to want to grow on that dimension. So that's one difference. You're very committed to it. The second is it's really a learning goal, not an achievement goal. You know, it's the goal to learn more about being patient, becoming more patient. So it's really goals about you and your growth rather than getting 15 meals out or running a meeting or, you know, making a presentation to your boss.
It's more about your attributes and your traits. Is that right? Yep. Sort of growing as a person, not necessarily achieving certain things.
Yeah. If you have to give a presentation to your boss and you've never done it before, it might be that you want to control your nerves. It might be that you want to control your tendency to be a long talker. You might want to learn to speak with more emphasis. And so those are the kind of goals. They're really about being, ways of being, and how you want to be in the world rather than getting that speech done. As I always say, you're going to get the speech done anyway. It's really, what do you want to learn and how do you want to grow while doing the thing?
So you talked about flex goals being more so learning goals. And I know that you've spoken about the difference between a performance proof mindset versus a learning mindset. I would love for you to tell me about how someone can shift into more of a learning mindset and why that's a little bit better.
Yeah. Well, the second part, why it's better, is very easy to answer because there's lots of research on it. The first part is harder. So I'll take them in that order. So a performance-proof mindset serves us well. It serves us well when we know the rules of the game, when tasks are fairly simple, and we understand them well. Performance-proof mindset is kind of a clenched-jawed, I'm going to prove to you, that I've got what it takes. For many of the students I teach, it's how they got to where they are now in top MBA programs, for example. But it has some problems. First of all, there's the toll on you, your stress level, etc. Second is it doesn't leave you open to learning and growth, both content growth or personal growth. So a learning orientation, or what Carol Dweck calls a growth mindset, is really wondering, how can I grow in this situation? It's challenging. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to perform well, but I'm not going to get all clenched jawed and stressed about it. I'm going to go at it with a mindset of, I know I'm going to grow and that's going to be good from this experience. So there are tons of research that shows that that mindset, the growth mindset, allows you to learn things better and perform better. Don't get fooled that one of them has performance in it. It isn't that one cares about performance and the other cares about learning. They both want to perform well. It's just the attitude you go into the performance with. For example, there's one study that shows they become better leaders, in part because they're more willing to put themselves in challenging experiences, and they get more out of those experiences because they're not so worried about proving. They really just want to learn and take it in. So how do you shift, which is the harder question? There's less studies about that. One is, I think you can catch yourself being in a performance-proof mindset. I'm just not a good negotiator. That's a performance-proof. It's like saying, the ability I've got's all I've got. I don't know if it's going to be enough, so I'm just going to stay away from doing that. To saying, how can I use this experience to become a better negotiator, become a better leader, to do whatever you're trying to do? But you change the question you're asking in your head, not how can I show everyone how great I am, but how can I learn the most from this situation? And by the way, when you go at that trying to learn the most, it looks really good to other people. You know, employers are really excited when young people are oriented towards learning and growth because you've only been at the job, you know, a month, a year. And so they know for the long run, if you're oriented towards learning and growth, you're going to do much better. And there's one more idea. It comes from Carol Dweck herself. She calls it the power of yet. And it's adding that simple word to the sentences that are very performance proof. Like, I'm not a good negotiator. You add the word yet. I can't lead yet. I just can't do math yet. And that word helps shift your framing, your mindset a little bit, allowing you to be more open, less nervous, less flummoxed by setbacks, right? You're more like, yeah, that didn't go well. So let's try this, that kind of thing.
Okay, so you're sort of shifting into more of that improvement mindset and how can I learn from this mindset? But obviously that performance proof mindset, it's so easy to slip back into that, right? It's sort of a natural way of being and it's very ego-based. Is that something you would suggest someone do formally before they kick off an experience? So sort of write down, what specifically am I aiming to learn from this to shift into that mindset? Or is it more just sort of a question you ask yourself as you go through? Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I thought of it when I first wrote the first article about this that fed into the book. We thought about it as something you did beforehand to get
Okay.
yourself ready. Another academic wrote an entire article about how you can do it at every stage, right? You could do it before, you could do it during. If you have a growth mindset during, you're going to be more open to feedback from other people, right? Because it doesn't seem like a threat. Whereas if you have a performance proof mindset, people potentially giving you negative feedback feels like it's a threat to you, your survival in this organization or in this team. And when you reflect at the end, after the experience, having a growth mindset probably allows you to look at more things and feel comfortable thinking about where you messed up as in addition to where you did well. So I think it could be applicable at any stage of an experience. If you're going through the experience using some of the practices in the book, it can help you with all of them.
Yeah, it's something I've tried to use in my life, and I definitely find myself trying to lean into the learning mindset throughout as well, just because it's so easy to switch back to the performance proof mindset. It's just so natural.
Natural, and it's been ingrained to us through all of our K through 12 school experiences and typically in college. It's interesting, Carol Dweck's work has been mostly influential on educators. Here in the US, they're trying to change how they interact with kids to inculcate more of a growth mindset than a performance proof.
So, in your book, you talked about the power of creating a vision, which a lot of people have talked about, right? It's really common in the self-development world. But you had some really interesting things to say about how to shape your vision in a way that makes it more effective. I'd love to hear you talk about that.
Yeah, this is drawing on the writings of a local CEO in my town here in Michigan. He started a deli that's become famous countrywide. I don't know about worldwide, but countrywide. And then a whole host of small businesses, a creamery, a roadhouse, an event space for a wedding, all done to super high quality. He also writes books. And one of the things, the ideas were his ideas, but he said basically everything we do in this company, we start by articulating a vision for it. So if we're going to start a new program, we first sit down and articulate a vision. And he had a couple of rules. He said, you write the vision as if it has already happened, and you use evocative language. You create a word picture of future you, for example, and you use evocative language that really captures where you want to get to. So the idea is you have a picture in your mind, and the vividness of that picture attracts you to want to work towards it. So I'm totally down with vision boards, where people cut and paste. I think they're great. When they become just bucket lists, I'm not as excited. But when they're like, I want to be more present, and they put up a picture of someone in a meditative stance, I think that's great because it makes a picture in your mind. The example I sometimes use is when you build a house with a design and build firm, you get a blueprint, and it shows the length of this wall and the length of that wall. When you go with an architect, way more expensive, but you get a rendering, you get a picture of this house. And it's very evocative, that picture. It makes you really want to make that happen. Same here. So typically it's done with words, So to use the example that we started with of me during the holidays when the kids are all home, what's a picture of how I want to be during that holiday? The more I can get that vision in my mind, the more I'm motivated to work towards it. It helps me to set my flex goals. The goals came out of two places for all the people we interviewed, either a vision of where you want to go or some pain you were experiencing in where you are. So some people saw they were having a negative effect on their teammates, and so they wanted to change. That's different than I just have this image of future Sue, who's more zen-like, calm, always has time for people. Current Sue struggles, but future Sue.
So, tell me a little bit about that if you can. I mean, I'm sure some people have had goals that have come from that place of pain versus that vision of the future. Is one more effective than the other, or are they both pretty powerful?
Well, one is happier than the other.
Sure.
It's more aspirational. And the lovely thing about it is it's very agentic. You're in a creative mode. You see where you want to go, and you're going to help yourself get there. The other is a little more not as fun, you know, so I don't think we like it when we see we've caused pain to other people, but it does help us to move. The one person I cite in the book, she was an extremely enthusiastic person. She expressed her emotions enthusiastically. What she tended to notice is she didn't leave anyone else room to be enthusiastic, because no one could be as enthusiastic as she was. So they just tended to back off a little bit. And it was very hard if someone wasn't enthusiastic about what she was talking about. Expressing that view was really hard. And so she just noticed that, I'm really shutting people down. So that's the pain of the present. It's not extremely painful, but it's creating something you don't want to create and using that to motivate a flex goal. And hers was to express her emotions in ways that allowed room for others.
So in your book, you talk a lot about experimentation, which is something that I talk about too. I'm really into the idea of being a curious scientist about your life. If someone were to set up a little experiment in their life, what would be the advice that you'd give them to set up that experiment successfully?
Yeah. So first of all, it's very nice to meet a kindred spirit on experimenting. There's not a ton of us out there, but I also love it. I love the idea of an experiment. It goes with the idea of flexing, because it's just a little thing you're going to try. You know, I think about one definition of growth is to come to be by degrees or by degree. And that's how I think about it. You're trying to come to be the best person you can be in your job or as a parent or a sibling. And it's going to happen by degree. It's going to happen by trying small things. And so that's the experiment. So to me, the experiments, I mean, I don't really have a lot of judgment about them. I don't think anything is wrong. The things I caution people about is don't identify six, two, maybe three that you can try. And oftentimes it's just one thing you're going to try in an upcoming experience. You know, I'm going to try to summarize what I hear people say before I speak, right? To be a better listener. That's just one experiment. So keep it small, keep it doable, keep it something you'll remember. I think those are probably a set of criteria that would work.
Yeah, I love that. Something else that you talk about is you pull from this quote, which is what you see depends on the window from which you look, which is a popular quote, and the power of reframing your experiences. Do you have any go-to tools that you use to reframe events, or maybe go-to questions that you ask yourself to help you reframe?
Yeah. For me, this was such a powerful idea. I learned it first from Peter Senge and his work. And it's just the idea that we create the reality that we respond to. If I think, you know, like as a woman, I'm going to go into a room and men are going to be judging me and not open to me, I go in judgy, I go in defensive, and I probably find they're not that open to me. And so when I heard this idea, and especially the idea of the window from which you look, it was really evocative to me. So it sticks in my mind, and I use it a lot. So shifting your window, I think the biggest thing is self-awareness, you know, self-awareness of the story that you tell yourself stories, right? Once you're aware that you do that, as all humans do, then you can catch yourself thinking, oh, the class isn't going to like this for my life, or I have to do this to please this judgmental boss. You might be able to think then, what might be another story I could ask myself that would make this different for me, right? Because I know that it's all stories up there. You know, like, is that person asking me question after question because he's trying to put me down? That's one story. Or he's super interested. That's a very different story.
Yeah. And you almost talk about this from the forefront of, you know, how can I go into this experience looking at it from a different perspective, as well as after. So doing that reframing after an event. I'd love to know if you have any sort of specific ways that you go about approaching that. Do you, you know, brainstorm a list of ways of reframing and then pick the one that is your choice or something along those lines?
Yeah, well, I like you and probably most of your listeners, I'm pretty busy. So I do a lot of this on the fly. These things have become very ingrained habits for me, but I'll catch myself feeling bad. The emotion start is first about something, an event, and then I'll think about, well, why am I feeling bad? And then I say, okay, that's a story I'm telling myself. And then I think, what might other stories be? One experience I had a boss who, there were four of us who reported to him, and he believed you don't thank people for doing their work because it's their job. Like if you thank people, they think, well, they went over and above, but they didn't go over and above. They're just doing their job. Why would I thank them? That was just his worldview. And it drove the other, we were all associate deans, it drove the other associate deans crazy.
Of course.
Like they didn't know where he was at. They didn't know what he thought of them. They didn't know. And so I decided I'm going to story it this way. I'm going to story it. He believes in me and he'll let me know if there's anything I do that makes his belief go down. And so his non-responsiveness to me didn't bother me at all because of the way I storied it. I storied it as he has total confidence in me, which allowed me to not be bothered by the way he was acting in ways that other people were.
I love that. And it sounds like it's almost a mental habit for you, right? Like you have that process down pat in your mind. And whenever you notice yourself feeling bad about something, you just sort of go to that reframing process.
Yeah, emotions are often trigger for more cognition, more thinking, right? So I'm really angry, or I'm really I feel defeated. For me, that's the time you think a little more about what assumptions, what story you're bringing into the situation.
So there was this really interesting study in your book that found that people are four times more likely to prefer additional practice to reflection, which I found so interesting as someone who personally doesn't enjoy the process of reflecting. I'll avoid it if I can. I know it's important, but oh my gosh, do I want to just do versus reflect?
Well, the data you just cited, some of it is pretty clear about the payoff for reflection. It's especially important when the tasks you're trying to do are more complex, subjectively evaluated, like I'm trying to be a good leader. That could mean different things to different people in different situations. It could change over time. And carving out some time to think about what are you doing? How is it landing? What do people need and want? Really makes a difference for your effectiveness. The data are really clear on that. There's a great quote from a poet that I have in the book that talks about like a lot of us don't really want to sit with the beautiful, wonderful mess that's inside of us. Right. And that's why we got so busy in the first place, so that we could stay well away from our thoughts, our feelings, our fears, our anxieties. And so I get and I share your tendency to be busy and not reflect. I'm very happy when I have a lot to do, et cetera. But the payoff, but the payoff is there. In fact, there's some data that shows reflection can make someone who's only an average performer perform way better than you would expect, just given their skills. So it's pretty powerful. So the book gives a lot of ideas about how to do it, and I'm with you. Some of them I would never do. Like that CEO I mentioned that writes, he journals for 20 minutes every morning. Every morning. I am not a morning person. This is not what I'd want to do first thing in the day. There's another person I work with who's a very high-flying executive coach. He's also an extreme extrovert. He gets on the phone with a friend every night, and the friend asks him three questions that he's asked him to ask. And he uses that talking to reflect, and then he asks the friend three questions. So they do that like 5 nights a week. That's how he reflects. I wouldn't do that either. Talk to people late at night. So I reflect. I use my phone and I use voice recognition. I talk into my phone. I talk for a living. So I talk into my phone, thoughts and feelings. I tend to do it when something is a little off kilter. I don't do it on the daily.
Okay.
And that was true of a lot of people in that I talked to in the book. They did it when they're on airplane flights. They pull out a pad of paper and reflect. So for many years, I had a practice of Sunday nights. And I was reflecting on, what do I want this week to be? And what did I, you know, what did I get out of last week? So it's really figuring out some pattern that's right for you and not torturing yourself that you're not doing it right or enough, because you're only going to do what you're going to do, you know? So it's figuring out what pattern works for you.
100%. Look, you may not have an answer for this question, but so for me, when I do some kind of reflection, which I do, I intentionally reflect because I know that it is good, but sometimes it feels like I'm just like checking off a to-do on my to-do list. You know, I'm like, oh, need to ask myself what I learned. Is there a mindset that you go into reflection with that you find makes the reflection feel more valuable in any way?
Yeah. Well, I do feel like the fewer shoulds you have about all this, the better. You know, I should do this, or I should do that. I should go in with this mindset. So, you know, I think if you just remember reflection around your important experiences, right? One's like flexing means you can pick this up, use it for an experience, like I'm planning the retreat for the whole department. You know, that's the experience. I'm going to work on my listening during this whole prep for the retreat itself, and then I'm going to reflect after. If you just do that, you're going to be better off.
Yeah.
You know? So it doesn't have to be something you do every day or every week. It could just be for the experiences that you choose to work on your growth within. You know, so for me, that Christmas holiday, you know, it's like, in January, do I take a moment and sit down and think, well, what worked? When was I struggling with my goal of being more patient? What drove that?
Okay.
I can tell you what drove it. My son-in-law, when I first met him, I asked him, so tell me about your mom and dad. And he goes, my mom is a living saint.
Oh, wow.
And that put me in such a performance-proof mindset.
Oh, no.
I first felt sorry for my daughter. It's like, whoa, how are you going to be a living saint? But I find when he visited, it was putting me in a performance-proof mindset.
I can see that.
I was trying to live up with living saint, and, you know, I'm not. And so I finally, this last visit, we finally talked about it. And he said, no. You're probably a living saint to your kids. Don't worry about it. So
I love that. What a nice thing to say about your mom. But yes, I could see that putting you in a performance-proof mindset, definitely. A little bit of that comparisonitis for sure.
I broke down at day 2 3/4. And I just, I'm mostly talking to my husband, like, I can't do this anymore.
Oh, bless. That's so funny. Amazing. You know what? I've actually made my way through every single question that I had, which is incredible. I didn't think that I would get there, but you have had so much value to share. Is there anything else that is top of mind for you when you're thinking about someone who's maybe new to the flex mindset, maybe top pieces of advice that you would share with them?
Use it when you need it.
Yep.
Use it when growth is on your mind. Don't use it in a way where you're doing what you're doing anyway. I mean, that's why I use this to help busy people to grow.
Yeah.
And use it doing what you're doing anyway. Just add in these practices. We've talked about a few. There's a couple more in the book. If you did even any one of the practices, try to set an intention about your growth, you'd be better off. If you use them as a set, you know, like I set an intention about my growth and I think about what's an experiment I could try to get there. And I figure out a way to see how I'm doing, you know, I'm going to grow a lot more. But, you know, I'm not into shoulds. I'm not into making it monolithic. I'm into nibbling at the side to try to become the best person you can be, and giving yourself grace along the way, recognizing that You got a lot on your agenda, and this should be a want to, not a have to, should to.
One thing that you've mentioned a few times in this interview is the idea of not leaning into shoulds. Is that something that you've thought about it a lot? It's something that actually is on my mind a lot lately, so I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
I have thought about it a lot. It isn't in the book necessarily.
Yeah.
But I've thought about it ever since I was in college and a friend of mine came up to visit. And she just walked around in my day. And I said, okay, we have to go to this office and do this. Now we have to go there. And now we have to go there. And she said, Sue, you got to work on making your have to's want to's. Very interesting comment, because I actually wanted to go to that office. I was going to finish some tasks that was important to me, given the goals I had for the job I was doing. I wanted to go talk to these people, but I was storing it as have to's. I was literally saying, I have to do this, that I have to do that, that I have to do this other thing. And so it's really getting in touch with what is your goal? You know, not a flex goal or a content goal, but how do you want to be in life? And using that to motivate the growth. Like, I really wanted to be a good leader for the in the leadership jobs I've had. And, you know, I really want to be a good teacher. Those are things I want to do. And so when it's doing the things, I don't do them as shoulds. I do it because I'm really drawn to that noble goal. You know, to finish off the Christmas example, I really want my kids to come home to a warm and inviting home.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, that makes me want to work on being more patient. It makes me want to try experiments to get there.
Please tell me, what are your recommendations recently that have really improved your life? They could be apps, could be a way of thinking, it could be a book, whatever is on your mind.
Two things. One is I tend to get overwhelmed by everything I need to do in my life. And I found that I tend to compress time. So I think about, oh God, the holidays are coming. I have so much to do. I'm so overwhelmed. And I forget that, yeah, I'm busy tomorrow, but I actually have Wednesday afternoon where I'm doing nothing. But I've erased that. I just think between now and December 25, because I celebrate Christmas, I'm so busy, but it's not really true.
Yeah.
So I contribute to my own overwhelm by how I'm thinking about it. That was super useful to me. And then the other is something I was taught a while ago, which is to add the words with joy. Mm-hmm. I want to be on this podcast and I want to go at it with joy. I want to tackle the retreat I'm planning for the department with joy. And it's just something we forget, that there could be a lot of positive emotions in just about everything we do. And if we're intentional about it, just nudging our intentions a little bit in that way, we can find those positive emotions and make more positive experiences.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate your time. You have delivered so much value in such a short amount of time. You've been fabulous.
Well, it's my pleasure. I really hope people will pick up the book. I have loved putting it out in the world. I've realized that being useful to others is my love language. So I love it when people say things like you just did and pick up the book. If I see anybody with the book with post-its on it, I get really excited.
I love that so much. Yes, definitely pick up the book. It's absolutely incredible. Okay. At the end of every episode, I share my recs of the week. Some recommendations related to the podcast episode to help you dive even deeper. You've already gotten some amazing recommendations from Susan herself. My most obvious recommendation here is going to be Susan's book, The Power of Flexing. I really do recommend it. If you enjoyed any of the content in this podcast episode, you're going to love her book. It will be linked in the show notes for you to grab. Another book that I would recommend is Benjamin Hardy's Personality Isn't Permanent. This is very much about flexing your personality traits. It's a very inspiring book and really good for this time of year when you're in that level up mode. And my last recommendation is another book by Stephen Guise. It's called How to Be an Imperfectionist. If you want to get behind the experimenting idea that Susan talked about, but you're like, I just have these perfectionist tendencies that I'm struggling to get past, Stephen Guise's book is going to be great for you. I'll have that linked in the podcast show notes as well. We are wrapping up this episode with the last segment, mini moves. For every podcast episode, I like to share at least 2 mini immediately actionable things that you can do to put the learnings from this podcast into place in your life, because that's the whole point. Mini move number 1, think about an event or something that is coming up in your life. So for example, maybe you are hosting Christmas dinner. Then get clear on what traits or qualities you want to practice during that event. For example, maybe you want to be a calm host. And lastly, think about a few little mini moves that you could make that would make you a calm host. Think about what a calm host looks like. What does a calm host look like the day of the event? And what do you need to do to look exactly that way? What does a calm host look like when they greet their guests at the door, etc., etc.? Mini move number 2, spend some time today reflecting on an effort that you made recently, whether it went well or it didn't go so well, and experiment with what kind of reflection feels good for you. Actually, after this podcast, I've really been reflecting on like what kind of reflection suits my brain, what kind of reflection feels good, because oftentimes when I do sort of tick the box templated reflection questions, it doesn't feel that good for me. So instead, where I'm leaning is little reflection walks. This suits my brain because there's a lot of flexibility. I also feel like I'm doing something while I'm reflecting, and walks always make me feel a little bit more creative and I think a bit more outside of the box when I go on walks. If you liked this podcast episode and you like any of my content, you're going to love the Intention app. You can download it using the podcast show notes. This is my app filled with all of the tools for managing your mind to create a life that feels really good. It has meditations, it has journaling guides, it also has programs and courses that you're going to absolutely love if you love my content. You can download that using the show notes. I appreciate you so much, and you'll hear from me soon.